Good evening.
Hello.
I know there were a couple more people hoping to join us, but I think we can get started and bring them up to speed. Let's bring them up to speed as we go along. And I apologize for starting a few minutes late. I was explaining to a couple of women, I was talking at dinner with an old friend who was the bishop when I was on internship. And I hadn't seen him in a while, so we were just chatting away, and my husband said, "It's a little after six." So I came here, and then I didn't have my phone, so I ran back up and on. We're good now. But I thank you for coming tonight. We're going to be focusing on found poetry this evening, which I'll get into in a little bit. Yesterday, if you were in the writing class, it was an introduction into creative writing, especially out of grief and tragedy, and thinking about speaking from the silence. So today we're going from speaking from the silence to found voice, found poetry. If you don't know, my name is Corrine, like I said, and I'm here because of Ben and Renee. Ben Larson, as you hopefully heard some about this week, is a good friend of mine from Luther College, and then we ended up going to the same seminary too. Not on purpose, but a very good blessing on accident. And then we both met Renee early on in seminary, and like I said yesterday, Renee and I became instant friends, and Ben and Renee became instant friends and more. When I learned a lot about Ben was that he loved life and loved the world, which included Haiti, of course. When he went to Haiti, I was working on an independent project at home because my husband and I just had our first baby girl, our first daughter, like a month and a half before that. She was born November 23rd. So my project for that January was really a way for me to stay home with Eleonora and Robbie. So I did an independent study on poetry and motherhood and God and how that all fit together. When Ben found out about that, he said, "Oh, I've got the perfect book for you." And it's like he always had that, "Oh, I have this perfect thing for you." So I was reading his book that he actually gave to Renee for a Valentine's Day gift, I found out. Poems about God and love, written by like Rumi and Hafiz and others. So I was reading that when I found out about the earthquake. And when I first read this email from one of our professors, I have the article that I first received with me. And I saw it and I thought, I need to call Ben. And so I called his phone and I wasn't expecting to reach him, but I left a message. And I was trying to be really like brave. Because he teased me sometimes about being weepy. So, it's like, "Hi Ben, we just found out about the earthquake and we want you to know that we're praying for you and we love you and Eleonora can't wait to play with your beard." Mm-hmm. All babies loved Ben's beard. And so I said this and then, "We love you," and then I called Renee's and John's phones. And then I called my friend Laura, who is one of my best friends in the world and also went to Luther with us. And that's when I realized how devastating this earthquake was and that our friends may not have made it. So in the midst of all that, I felt unable to write and unable to do a lot of things for a while. So my project for that January kind of changed from poems about motherhood and God to mourning and dancing, which we'll get to on the last day in our writing class. But this mourning the loss of my dear friend and of so many Haitians and also dancing at the birth of my daughter, and how that kind of fit together. So I have this project with me. This is what it looks like. I can share this with you later or on the last day. But during this project, I told you yesterday, I couldn't write. And so there's a blank page in the middle to kind of symbolize that, that silence. And then I happen to have this book by Annie Dillard about found poems. Annie Dillard is, again, one of those honest writers. And I find I'm attracted to honest writers. In one of her books called Holy the Firm, she speaks about lifting up prayers to God, and she says she loves this priest because at one point in worship he just says, God, we pray these prayers every week. Listen to us. And I think that kind of fits with Bible study, this the daughters of Zion saying, listen to me, look at me, God. And Annie Dillard just says, I love that. This priest, we pray these prayers every day, every week. Listen to our prayer. I read her book, Found Poetry, in the midst of all this, and when I didn't have my own words to speak, I used the words of others. So I used articles that were coming in about the earthquake or about Ben, or sermons that were being written like you wouldn't believe. And I began to change the words, put them on different lines, or take some out, capitalized some words. Words that had meaning I'd put on a new line. Sometimes I'd play with the spacing and I'd have all of these words scrunched together, or like great spaces in between them. And they all meant something. And that's how I kind of found my voice again. And that's what I want to share with you this evening. Found poetry, like I said, is this form of poetry that's taking words or excerpts or whole passages from other books or even cookbooks. So I brought a couple of cookbooks with me tonight. And changing them around to create something new, this new life. And found poems can either be treated, which means that they're changed in a profound way or a systematic manner, or they're untreated, which means they're virtually unchanged from the order, syntax, and meaning of the original piece of writing. So you can choose tonight if you want to really change things and even drop your own words in, or if you want to maybe do something a little challenging and not add any of your own words, but take just the words from these books that I have or articles that I brought with. Okay. I would like to share with you a couple of found poems that I wrote, so that maybe we can kind of see what they would look like. This one is from the ELCA news release on January 18th, and it was called, He Spent His Last Breath Singing, Wife, Cousin, Remember ELCA's Ben Larson. And before I read this, I want to say, if any of you need to leave at any time tonight, I will not be offended. I won't think, oh, what did I say? So please feel free. I understand in grief and tragedy, it can be really raw. And so if you need to just get up and take a break, that's okay. This is, like I said, from the news release from the ELCA, and it's called, At That Moment, All Changed. The past week for Renee Splicka Larson and Jonathan Larson has been filled with danger, uncertainty, heartache, and deep pain as they mourn the apparent loss of Renee's husband, Jonathan's cousin, Ben Larson. And then I have an ellipsis. All changed on January 12th when a severe earthquake struck Haiti. I turned and I saw him, and I saw concrete starting to fall on him. I called for him and I started running toward him. At that moment, the two floors above collapsed on them. In this poem, I have capitalized certain words: danger, uncertainty, heartache, and deep pain. I also, and I'm gonna write a shorter one up here so you can see it better, but I also put some words just on their own, like filled and loss and collapse. Just trying to play with the meaning a little bit. This one is a little bit lighter. This is from an article by Joe Orso from the La Crosse Tribune, and it was written January 17th, 2010. And Joe Orso, this was one of the articles that meant the most to me in the days following the earthquake. And because he took parts of his interview that he had done with Ben when Ben first started at Wartburg Seminary, and Ben shared like his faith and what he hoped the church to be. And so Joe Orso took parts of that interview with the news of his death and the earthquake. So this poem is primarily Ben speaking when he started seminary. It's called Ben's Words, Ben's Works. Taking the out group and making them the center. People that have never felt like anyone feel like they're important to Jesus. Outsiders, having a place, that's what I want my church to be. If you knew Ben, you know that is right, just spot on. I'm gonna try to write a little bit of this up here and explain what I did with it to kind of help you think about your own poems. So first we have taking the out group. And what I did here is I put out group outside the lines. I apologize for the marker, it might be hard to see. Okay, and the next line is, and making them, so I started this, taking the and making them together, if that makes sense. Making them the center. So of course I put that in the center. And then I go with people that have never, and then I put never a little bit outside of the center. Just to like make it clear, like never felt like anyone. They never did. So I'm just gonna put the word never here instead of writing it all out. So we're losing our marker. Never, and then I put felt like anyone here. Feel like, and I italicized important to Jesus. So I'll just kind of make a squiggle for that. And then outsiders, I lined up with outgroup. The next line is having a place. So outsiders having a place. And I put that in line with the center. So they're really going to have a place. They're going to be in the center as an honored guest. So this is having a place right there. And then I put an equal sign. That's what I want my church to be. Period.
Nice.
That's it. Period. The end. I hope that makes sense for us.
Can't see that.
I know. And then the last one that I'll share with you before we kind of dig into our own stuff is called Where is God? And this is also taken from Joe Orso's article on January 17th. And his theology in this article just blew me away. The way he thought about the suffering of not only people in Haiti, but Ben's family and friends, it just touched me. So this is called Where Is God? There, weeping in pain, on top of a high hill in Haiti, weeping in pain on an airplane with a widow, weeping in pain in Duluth with a couple parents, weeping in pain there, promising to hold and keep and give whatever they need there, wherever we grieve. With this one, I have there on the outside, like right along the first line. And then weeping and pain is indented every time. So you can look down to this question, where is God? And see right in the center, weeping and pain, weeping and pain, weeping and pain, weeping and pain. And then there is all, it also stands out. And it's weeping in pain, and then it says, where? On a high hill in Haiti, on an airplane with a widow, in Duluth, and on. And then finally, promising to hold and keep and give. I didn't put any space in between those words, so it's like the computer doesn't like that. The computer often doesn't like poetry, I found. You just gotta kind of ignore the automatic corrections, turn it off, and go with it. So I put to hold and keep and give, just like this kind of hug, like this God keeping and encircling the people in Haiti, Renee, Judd, and April, and family, whatever they need, and then there again, wherever we grieve. I think that's enough for now for examples. Thanks for grabbing this, by the way. I just want to say, for me, the general look of poetry means a lot. I'm always thinking about why a word should be on the next line, or if it should be indented, if it should be capitalized, spacing, so like if there's a comma or a period, why is it there? Every little space or a line or a punctuation mark means something to me in poetry. I invite you to, when you write tonight, to think about where you're going to space things out and have a reason for it. Even if you don't understand it, but you feel like this word wants to be here. I don't really know why, but this word needs to stand out. And just go with it. Okay. I have paper here. I have unlined and lined paper, some pens, and then I have a lot of articles. Whoops. I have, kind of being cheeky, as one of our professors from Warford would say, a letter to Pat Robertson in response to his outrageous theology from the devil. Well, if you're interested, and then I've got some articles from the internet, from news news releases here, from the earthquake. I have some sermons. This is by Jim Wallace, who wrote God in Politics, if you're familiar with that. And he wrote about how God is suffering with those who are suffering. So those are here. And I also have some more playful things if you're feeling more playful tonight. This is Eleonora's book, The Very Hungry Caterpillar. Don't mind the chewing.
She's hungry.
And then some cookbooks, which are actually magazines, vegetarian magazines. A Wartburg Theological Seminary brochure, because that's where I went to seminary, and who knows what poem could come out of this. That'd be kind of fun to see. And then I kind of picked up some books from the library my own book, The Black Jacobins, which Renee recommends if you want to read a history of Haiti. So I'll put that with the Haiti material. But I picked up some books at the library, a lot of them having to do with grief and tragedy, since that's what we're writing about. But I also picked up some silly things like mountaineering first aid. So who knows, that could be kind of a funny little poem. Oh, I guess that's the only funny thing I chose. So I'll put playful things on this chair maybe. And then the other books from the library, Eyes on the Prize, speaking about the civil rights movement, Chasing Ghosts, Unconventional Warfare in American History, An Unquiet Mind, A Memoir of Moods and Madness, Hiroshima Diary, which was written by a doctor, actually. I thought that'd be interesting. And then Darkness Visible, A Memoir of Madness. And this was written by someone who survived the same deep depression that Vincent van Gogh ended up kind of killing himself over. So, well, if you want to look at grief, that's a good one.
Did he kill himself or kind of kill himself?
I don't know. I also have Annie Dillard's book that really saved me during that month of the found poems. And the way Annie Dillard wrote found poems is she didn't add any of her own stuff or take anything out, so hers were really like untreated found poems. But if you want to take a look at more examples, that's here too. Does anyone have any questions before we kind of let loose?
So when you were writing this poem, did you take phrases verbatim, or you just took words and mixed them around?
Well, with the ones that I wrote, I took them verbatim because I thought that's what you had to do, and I'm kind of a rule stickler sometimes. I didn't really know that about myself until recently, but like if you have to go, if the door says go in here and use other door, like I'm going to use the one that says go in here. So I thought that's what you had to do, but you don't. I did that, but if you want to add in your own word, or if you think an and needs to go in, like I don't think found poetry is going to knock on your door and say, hey, you are doing it wrong. So. Any other questions before we begin?
I had not heard the word found poetry. Do you have a definition for us that aren't poets or
yes.
literature?
Yes. I hadn't heard of it either until January that month when I happened to have this book. And I liked Annie Dillard. That's the only reason I had this book. And I'm like, found poems. Oh, maybe she found some poems. So found poetry is taking words or excerpts or passages from other pieces of writing and kind of playing with them and manipulating them to create something new, to create your own poem.
I got that much, but okay. Is this a new kind of concept?
I'm not sure.
No.
Okay.
It's not.
Okay.
No.
It's
okay.
Like story starters when you use a picture to catapult yourself into writing creatively. You use the visual image of those people in the picture to start the narrative. So it's wordplay has been around for a long time.
Yes, you use it with kids.
Okay.
Teachers use it with
kids. Yeah, teachers use it with
kids. Okay. Thank you.
It's to demystify the poetic process as well.
Ah.
It works accessible. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, they think poetry, oh my gosh, no,
yeah,
thank
right.
you.
Yeah.
Or, oh, it has to rhyme and I'm not good at rhyming. Well, this is more free and helping us get started a little, like, let's take a step. Any other questions? And I can be around if you have any questions while we write, otherwise... That's right.
Do you think this is how poets have always written them, taking pieces of life and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Trying to create some sort of meaning.
Take the words. taken phrases and moved it and...
Well, it's kind of what we do in analysis, you know, we take fragments of ourselves and put it out there and see what sense we can make.
Sorry, here's my...
No, I just thought of something and I had my hand up where I forgot.
This is like, don't forget.
I just wanted to share that, talking about when my mom did this, picking up the pieces, I write a lot too, and I haven't, and I do artwork and always have some sort of project going or writing project going, and through my grief, I didn't write, and I couldn't paint anything or draw anything pretty. But I just realized just now, and you helped me realize it, and I want to share it, is that I ended up doing mosaic art for the first time ever. And it just dawned on me how those two things are so related, that it was just a puzzle, and putting that puzzle together, and how therapeutic that was to organize somebody else's color. I don't even have to make that decision. I just grab a color out of the bag, and I snip it, and I don't have any control over how those little chips break up, and I just get to reorganize them in a way that is comforting. And so I think there's a parallel there between the found poetry, and I think it validates the process of found poetry through grief and creative process and healing. Because I was bruised too.
Thank you. And I don't know if you've got a... for mosaic art, those are broken pieces to create something new. Taking brokenness
and making it whole.
It doesn't look like it's covered something.
And it's not like perfectly whole, because we still have that brokenness in our lives, but there is this new life.
Mm-hmm. New creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cut a cake. I'm glad you
okay.
Why don't we write until 5 after, and then we'll come back together, and if you want to share anything, we'll have time for that, and then you can kind of explain why you put words in certain places. Would that give us enough time to share? Enough time to write?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
How are we doing? If you are still working, feel free to keep writing. Or if you would like to take the book with you, if it's a library book, you can take that and just return it to the Holden Library. Again, if it's a printed article, you can keep that. The Black Jacobins is mine, and then The Hungry Caterpillar, which I have. So. Would anyone like to share what they created, or meaning behind their creation?
I can share mine.
Thank you.
I just picked this book up at the library. It's one of the ones that was recommended. And Amy Wilmot's, all I did was read the first few pages, and I loved how she wrote. So I took, what's the name of the book? The Rainy Season. That's about Haiti. Then and Now, it says. And so I was just copying it over, but I thought, she starts out by saying, my city is gone. But I thought, I just leave a blank. My blank is gone, people can just fill it in. My blank is gone. My
blank.
I don't know. An unexplorable abyss, churning with cascading roll. The rubble of my imagination. Was it all leading to this? Here to this wasteland? And then she goes on to answer. Oh, I did too. Of course it was. History happened in between. Love, babies, politics, gossip. Prayer, paintings, evening news. But when you stand in the rubble, you begin to wonder, where even the soul resides.
The other author. What was the last one?
Where even the soul resides. Like I was mentioning today, in that loss. It's hard to find yourself.
Thank you. You said those were her words, but as we were saying, in grief or tragedy, sometimes we need someone else's words to get us started, but they take on, we kind of find our own voice in that too. And rather than like a newscaster reading about, you know, the stocks are this today, and then there was an earthquake in Haiti, and 200,000 people lost their lives, and the Packers lost, and, you know, and rather than hearing that, we can kind of give meaning to the words, that book or an article.
I thought that this one also sounded like could be two voices talking, so something could be said, and another person could respond.
Mm-hmm.
There could be two poems written side by side.
Oh, yeah. That one, I like that. Thank you.
I'd offer one. I picked up Annie Dillard's book, and this one caught my attention for obvious reasons. It's entitled Attempt to Move. Sometimes on a summer's day, the village is sunk in silence, as if sunk under the earth. Sometimes there is a seat by the side of the road with a cat resting on it. Each day appears unnoticed. Sometimes the wall of a house stands in the light. The spirit does not feel itself forsaken. Sometimes in the city, a man suddenly collapses and dies in the midst of the noise of the highway. Sometimes when the sea outside is calm, sometimes the frozen ships attempt to move. I did a lot of substitution as far as sometimes became one time. One time on a winter's day, the village is sunk in screaming, as if sunk in the fury. One time there was a wall by the side of the road with a child resting on it. The danger is unnoticed. One time the wall of the house stands in the light. The spirit does not feel itself broken. One time the city suddenly collapses. Thousands die in the midst of the quaking. One time when the earth became calm. All the time, trapped people could not move. And as I did that, I wondered, is that a sound poem?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay.
It's a poem, that's for sure. That's a good poem.
Well, I have something a little different because my experience with grief is much different from I think a lot of people here. And a bit of the backstory, I'll try to say, tell a little bit about if I can. I come from a very military family, and within 6 months of each other, I lost two nephews, and one was killed in the Battle of Fallujah. So I'm a pacifist, and I was raised in this military family, so I've always been kind of a conflict with my family values. And then the word conflict has always come up as far as reconciling and accepting his choice and then my worldview. So of course I picked up the book that said war, and the first word words that jumped out were supported at home. So I don't know if I actually got a poem out of this, but I'm not satisfied with the ending, but given the time limit, this is what I came up with. Ideas don't die. Enemy corpses, Magna Carta morality, moralistic crusades. For the cause of a peaceful world, let no one end conflict. The aftermath of Afghanistan, the divisive doctrine, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Afghanistan, failures and understanding. They didn't go into Iraq in that box.
I know that there is a time limit, and so it's hard to get it all worked out, but this is our attempt at starting, and we can always work the endings or cut out the beginning as we go. It's pretty powerful.
It's interesting you brought that book.
Share mine. I read a little bit of this, Darkness Visible. Pretty powerful. I only had to read a couple pages, and I got enough tragic lines to fill this. A gray stone facade in my mind, the chilly doldrums of life as I see it is unshaken. Constant drizzle and drab slow down time, joylessness. I'm physically and psychologically tortured, trying to recapture with far-off acidity. Glowing signs of a fatal outcome, worthlessness. Self-torture at a terrifying speed, slipping away, never to come down, restlessness. My foundation has crumbled. Light has disappeared from my consciousness, colliding nerves. I was shaken and need salvation to come full circle. And that's all his words.
Sometimes in poetry, you're going along, and then boom, that last line just makes you go, oh. And that, for me anyways, can you read the last line again, please?
I was shaken and need salvation to come full circle.
Diary, and I turn right to August 15th because that's the date I'm leaving here after being here a year. And coming here after dealing with my grandpa's death and Ben's death right after another, and so I thought, what can I get out of this day of his thing? So this was the day I could escape to the hills, but what route should I take? Follow the living, work our hearts out to sustain life in the ruins. Things I should not think about kept crowding into my mind. I waited. Bear the unbearable. The static ceased. I want you to go. This unexpected message left me stunned. Surrender into the remaining silence. The one word, surrender.
Follow the living.
It's incredible how that fit with the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And that surrendering.
There you go. Yeah. Good to think about when you're leaving a place that I grew so much here, but also, yeah, I need to let go and go forward and remember, but also, yeah, I don't know, it worked really well.
I like the titles.
August 15th.
Yeah. Does it mean something?
Yeah, I am meant to go that day. You know, I feel like that.
I hope that this has been life-giving for you. And if you, again, if you'd like to take the books with you, if they're from the library, please feel free to do so, and then just bring them back to the library when you're done. Can we close with a prayer? I feel like we should tonight. Gracious God, we give you thanks for this day, for all that you have taught us today and shown us, for all the ways that you have held us and have suffered with us. We ask that you would hear us, hear our voices, hear our silence, hear our poems, whether they are our words or borrowed from someone else to create something new. We ask that you would go with us this night and bring us peaceful rest so that we may wake and do your work tomorrow. In your name we pray and play. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.